We learn that as language, because it's fluid, you know, it changes. We've come in our culture, whether we choose it or not, 10, 15 years ago, whether we accepted it or not, men was a term that usually was applied generically to everything. Now in our culture, there seems to have been a movement of that, and that no longer works that way, whether we like it or not. And so when we read the scriptures, we keep in mind some of those phrases, like the guidelines thing over here in the little in that little shelf that suggests about guidelines for generic language. I buy generic at the drugstore whenever I can, and I've decided it's okay for me to talk generic whenever I can, and that it is certainly appropriate in the scriptures to see what really is generic, to hear it as generic, and so that we can be respectful to everyone. So we read this passage and we say, you know, children or community or brothers and sisters, and we try to read that and do that out of care. And as we laugh together and have a good time and tell jokes, we also try to be respectful to others and concerns and not hassle or belittle each other. And so, you know, I've lost a lot of jokes from my repertoire, I think, that don't work so well anymore. They're not the same kind of funny they used to be. And let's read this psalm. Behold, how good and pleasant it is when brothers and sisters dwell in unity. It is like the precious oil upon the head, running down upon the beard of Aaron, running down upon the collar of his robes. It is like the dew of Hermon, which falls on the mountain of Zion. For there the Lord has commanded the blessing, life forevermore. Grateful for the time that we've had this week. Think from headlines, from head trips to foot trips. Looking at the Bible from below. The title for today is when upside down is right side up. And I do think that the issue is not your political point of view or orientation, but to say when the issues of page 7 become the issues of page 1, maybe we're talking about kingdom at work. That is an interesting notion, don't you think? Yeah. And this song of praise, life forevermore, what God intends for all of us. The Psalms, voice to our experience of life. The Psalms, reflector for our experience for our experience of life. Sometimes even that which we have not been that been able to are put into words or articulate. So someone says it and we go, aha, yes, that's really what I was feeling. That's perhaps the true for all of us who have appreciated this place and been in the pool hall. And then we heard the hymn of praise that we sang yesterday evening at supper about the pool hall. Can do you remember how it goes? What was the? Let me see. Standing on the corner, right? Ah, yes. Yeah. And we said, oh, I wish I could have said that. But there it was, and it was good for us. Psalms can be seen through this little scheme of orientation, disorientation, reorientation. Not in any kind of an absolute way, but as a helpful little pattern to think about how we experience life and how we sometimes avoid and deny life. Now, through the course of the week, a couple things have happened. People have shared, and I'd ask June if she would share today, because she had an experience that was real significant for her, and I thought we might find it to be helpful for us. So you want to just come up here and stay right there or do whatever you do?
I'd like to tell you a little bit about my daughter, Denise. She was in the Navy, spent 2 years in Guantanamo Bay, Cuba, returned to the United States and was stationed in New Orleans. She was married, soon to be discharged from the Navy. Everything looked good. And then at that age of 22, she completed suicide. We were all devastated over what she had done, as anybody would be. Several months later, her youngest sister had a dream. Now, Laura dreamed that Denise was in a white, sterile hospital room reading the Bible. And in this dream, Laura saw the word Psalm and then number 4. So Laura got up out of bed and looked up Psalm 4, and I'd like to read that to you.
Let's do that. Turn your Bibles to Psalm 4.
I've taken a revised version. Answer me when I call to you, O my righteous God. Give me relief from my distress. Be merciful to me and hear my prayer. How long, O men, will you turn my glory into shame? How long will you love delusions and seek false gods? Know that the Lord has set apart the godly for himself. The Lord will hear when I call to him. In your anger, do not sin. When you are on your beds, search your hearts and be silent. Offer right sacrifices and trust in the Lord. Many are asking, who can show us any good? Let the light of your face shine upon us, O Lord. You have filled my heart with greater joy than when their grain and new wine abound. I will lie down and sleep in peace, for you alone, O Lord, make me dwell in safety.
What a wonderful word of comfort and a vision to have some confidence in. For you alone, O Lord, make me dwell in safety. Thank you. And from a position that said, it was, it is, and always will be, I said in my prosperity, I will never be moved. Bam! Your face was hidden from me. My world fell apart. But, and we don't know what it is, which maybe in some ways allows us to even pray it more universally. Thou hast turned for me my mourning into dancing, and loosed my sackcloth, and girded me with gladness, and so my soul praises thee. And, you know, that movement from life to death to resurrection. Clearly, I mean, that move, that sense for us is New Testament understanding, resurrection here, new life. That experience of praise that says, when I experience life to just be flooding in upon me, I feel compelled to express the joy. And I've got to talk about it. And maybe even some of the details of it. And my daughter had a hard time in school adjusting to new situation. We moved 7 times in 2.5 years, and they were 7 new schools. And she at the same time she was becoming fairly much of an expert. She also knew that she didn't like it. And there was she wrote a letter to a friend who was moving and said, "Oh, you just have the first 2 weeks are terrible, and you think no one's going to get to know you, and you walk around and you feel lonely." And then she was trying to talk about how the cycle goes for her. So she was going through it and not really all that aware of her own words, as we all are when we're in the pits. But then one day there was a breakthrough, and someone had befriended her. I think asked her to share a locker, and they, you know, she sort of had made a friend, as it were. And she came home and she wanted to know the village. That may have been the case in those days as well. So we've asked our songwriter and musician in residence, Phil Brunell, if he'll come forward and share with us some about how he goes about his craft, and then maybe help us try to unpack praise psalmody ourselves this morning. Okay?
Well, since I've never analyzed this in my life, I just do it. The thing that I mentioned yesterday is that when you are thinking about what you remember in life, there is a distinct correlation between the fact that you will remember more what has been set to music than what has not been set to music. I would be willing to say if you had to start to think of all the things you can quote more that you know with a tune than that you just know the words to. Music has a very unique sense of enhancing everything that we say. This is why in the 16th century, when the Italians finally, it all connected, and they finally did this thing called opera, it was like the most wonderful thing that had ever happened, because up to that time, it was speech spoken, and suddenly someone said, ah, but if you sing all of it, you have enhanced it, and you've taken it to one further level. And that furthest level is the one that people have always felt is the highest expression, because there is something about singing a text. You can say a word, but when you put music to it, it enhances it. It can enhance it in the wrong way when you try to go against itself and you try to say, I give you an example. If you were hearing a soprano sing, I know that my Redeemer liveth, and the first two notes of that are, I know. Now, if Handel had written it, which, because he was a smart guy, he didn't, if he had said, I know, mentally, you'd say, no, you really don't know, because you don't know when you go down, you know when you go up. And you will find all the way through music, texts that are affirmative never go down when they are speaking of affirmations. They go up, always. You don't talk, you'll never find any, well, maybe there's some obscure folk that we don't want to remember, but you won't find composers talking about heaven on low notes and hell on high notes. I mean, they just simply aren't going to do that. And all the way through music, you're going to find people expressing themselves according to that kind of mood. Seldom are you going to find, if ever, joy expressed in sort of lethargic minor terms. It just simply isn't going to happen. And if it does, you wonder what was wrong with them, that they missed the point somewhere along the way. But all of these kinds of things do have their very special place, whether we think about them or not. And this was the problem for me, is that I just simply do it and know that there are just these kinds of rules. I think, of course, when you look at in the Book of Psalms, you will find, I don't know about all of the translations, but I remember that in the old King James, oftentimes, does someone have a King James handy or something? Or let me try another. Let me just look at some Bible here. No. Let me just see. You know what? They don't do anymore. No, they don't have it in here. In the old ones, they used to tell you what tune, this is in King James, what tune was sung to the psalm. Now, all of those tunes are lost to us. We don't have them anymore, but it simply told you that there was a tune, and my suspicion is that back in those times, they had a group of, let's say, 25 tunes that they all knew. And then the job of the temple musician would have been to take the mood that was being expressed and fit words into the tune that they already knew. One moment of backing up from that, just so we're all on the same wavelength. In our hymn book, any hymn book that we have two titles to every hymn. We have a title for the words and a title for the tune. It's just a simple indexing. We have to have that. What most people get confused is because they say a title. Let's say, I'll give you an example. They say, Joy to the World. I love that melody, Joy to the World. Well, Joy to the World is not the melody. That's the title of the poem. The melody is called Antioch. And you'll find that always listed at the top of every hymn in capital letters. The fact is, it's simply an indexing way. And so the psalmists had titles. Titles of tunes can have any meaning at all. They do not have to be a specific rule. You can have titles of tunes that are related to the theme that you're singing about, or you can have titles of tunes that the person who wrote the tune just made up. For instance, a tune like bum 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 dee 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 do 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 do, which is called Saint Gertrude, was called that. Arthur Sullivan wrote it, the guy of Gilbert and Sullivan fame. And he wrote it while he was staying at the house of some woman named Gertrude. And so he canonized her on the spot and gave it that name. There's a tune in the old Lutheran Red Book, I don't know if it's in the green one, that Leland Saturin wrote, and the tune name is Marley, which was the first syllable of two of his children. I mean, you can call a tune anything, is the fact. So in the old King James, you'll see where it'll say that, you know, it is after such and such, and that's the tune name. Knowing that, then if you knew a tune name, you go, oh yeah, we're singing that tune today, and then you can put any set of words to it you want. But the point would be that the tune, one might be a lamenting kind of tune, another tune might be a joyful kind of tune, and so knowing those, you sort of knew how to work it. Now, if on a contemporary basis, you were going to set tunes, like yesterday when I, in our little group, and then I just made up one. The first thing you need to do, I mean, and I haven't thought about this, but you automatically choose lengths. Start with something that's easy. In other words, start with phrases that are going to be pretty much the same length. Don't try to find tunes that are, you know, 10 pulses and then 3, 17 and 2. Okay. Kinds of things. I mean, that kinds of the tunes like that are so rare, if they even exist. I mean, you'd have to write your own. So you want to find things that are pretty much standard. Things like, for instance, as an example, the tune Hymn of Joy. Bum 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 dee bum 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 bum. And you will find that all four lines of that are the same length. And you rhyme at the end of the line. I mean, obviously there's got to be a rhyme sequence in there. So you do that. Or you take a tune like do 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 do. Now that subdivides. You've got home, roam, play. Okay? Then you say heard, word, day. So you rhyme internally here and you rhyme at the end of the line. Okay, but those are easy because they're short. What you don't want to get in is these things that go way on out here, and about 20 words later you go, done. And then you've got to go 20 more words and say, gun, you know, or something. I mean, those are tough, you know, kind of thing. So you really start simple. I mean, the one I did, what did I do yesterday? I can't remember. I used T for two because it was a real simple one. Dee-da-dum, bum-ba-dum, you know, really simple ones to do. So you start, you know, very, your mind thinking in terms of short poetic forms. And it was very much the same thing, of course, that Martin Luther did when he first started putting a hymnal together, and he took familiar melodies that people knew. And again, you'll find that most of those melodies he took were pretty standard in terms of their length. Why is it that in our own country, something like our national anthem is such an easy one? Is because when Francis Scott Key wrote the words, O Say Can You See, by the Dawn's Early Light, that was, I think, something like the 120th setting of the tune. Dee-do-do-do-do-do. I mean, it had been done for 150 years before he ever did that. So it was an old drinking song from England, To Anacreon in Heaven was the original title. And, you know, everybody knew it. So you weren't starting with some tune that nobody knew. Somebody asked me the other night, now why don't you, when you and Doris do those things in the dining hall, why don't you write a new tune? And I said, because we don't have enough time here with the changeover of people, and we're never the same group, to expect people to learn a tune they've never heard. Yeah. And so it's much better to start with something that the great majority are all going to know, and then all you have to learn are new words. You don't have to learn new words and a new tune. If you are a community that's together all the time, then you should learn new tunes. That's great. But if you're not, if it's a transitional group like this is here, you don't have that flexibility. So it seems what you need, and if you take a tune, let's say, well, of those two, or another one that's good is the tune Dix. Da 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 dee da dum bum bum, dee da 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 dum bum bum. Those tunes, the first thing you do is you forget totally about the words that they are associated with. I mean, that's because otherwise you're starting to try to capture the same vowel that was in the original, and you don't want to get yourself caught into that whole business. You just want to get the meter working for you. But you could take any of those and make them praise tunes, and you could still express lament thoughts by saying, this is where I was, but joyfully I'm now here. You know, I don't think those tunes are particularly lament all the way through in themselves. Their nature is too upbeat. And then if you were really poetic with it, you might find a way that when the hymn did a big leap of, say, five notes, you might be ready with something about joy on a particular pitch. I mean, that's getting a little fine-tuned, you know. But I mean, the point is, you will see, and if you start to look through your hymns now, you will find that that's often the case, that there is that sort of feeling of using of certain words for leaping up that expresses a joy, or by the same token, sadness when it leaps downward. You will see that kind of thing. You will also see certain hymns that stay on the same pitch, and that implies resoluteness. I mean, when you sing A Mighty Fortress, to start out on the same pitch implies a sort of eternity to it. It wouldn't be quite the same thing if the hymn started, A Mighty Fortress. You know, the foundation doesn't sound real secure. down the I mean, there's a reason why things have a certain sort of limit to them. And anyway, that's enough. But it gives you.
So we'd like to now take some time to write some hymns of praise, and using the suggestion that was just given for why we sing to familiar tunes at table, we'd like to do some of that same kind of thing here and now, to give us a form that helps us channel and express our praise to God.
Why don't you let me make it very easy for you. If you take the three tunes that I just talked about, take any one of them. If you took either the Beethoven, the Hymn of Joy, or if you took Home on the Range, because we shouldn't just take the ones that we think of as being sacred, or if you took as a third one the Dix, D-da-da-da-da, which is sung either to As with Gladness or For the Beauty of the Earth. If you take any of those, the first thing you should do to make it very easy for yourself is to count out the number of pulses or beats in each line so you know how many you're dealing with. So if you say da 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 dee 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 dee, you know, you need to know how many syllables you've got to have at the end of the line there. And then you know where your rhyme is going to end. Okay? Then all you do is think up a text and just make sure that you rhyme when you get to the end. Now, that's the hardest of the three. The easier two are Home on the Range and Dix, because they're not so long. Dee 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 dee. Dee 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 dee. 5, 6, and 9. That's easy to come up with. You know, and you could figure something. I mean, you could each come up with something. It might be, you know, very, very simplistic, and then you have to start refining it. When Doris and I do those things together, it's basically to get something down, and then we start saying, you know, that isn't very good.
Would you say that again?
You know, you simply put something down.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, get it down on paper, and then look at it and say, oh no, that's not very good, I can do better. What is the problem is when you're sitting there thinking in your mind and you don't bother to put anything down. Because then you're always thinking, I'll make it come better, and it never does. So the most important thing is to put something down and just know I've got a rhyme at the end of the line. Maybe to make it the simplest one of the three is that tune that we sing with the words "For the Beauty of the Earth." So let's take that one as an example. Is that a piece of
yes.
What works? I am one of the world's worst of this department here. So if you take, all right, that tune name is called Dix. That's because the guy who wrote it was a guy named William Dix.
Oh.
So he named it after himself, which is okay. You can do that. If you took the first phrase, okay, so you go, you got "For the Beauty of the Earth," okay, so you got seven. "For the glory of the skies," seven. "For the love that from our birth over and above us lies," seven. I mean, we're talking easy game. I mean, this is not going to, I mean, you know, we're not starting you with one of those irregular meter ones. Okay, then comes that little refrain. "Lord of all, to thee we raise this our hymn of grateful praise." Hey! All right, here, we got a simple one there. Okay, so, and then all you have to do is know that these two, if you remember the words, these two rhymed at the end, these two rhymed, and these two rhymed. So you've got, you know, you've got a very simple job for yourself. Now, I'll make up the first two lines for you. I mean, this is really on the top of my head. Okay, so you could say on this seven, "I was feeling bad last night. You would not believe my Now, you have to realize, when you start doing this, it becomes very funny. Because you come up with some real winners, you know. And you realize a little bit what a poet has gone through. But anyway, you start out there. All right, now that, what I've done at first, was to do two things that are fairly kind of down. Because I need to make a progression. I mean, you can't just, every line can't be, you know, "I am happy, I am happy." I mean, there's got to be some kind of sense of going towards something. I mean, "For the Beauty of the Earth" really says, "For this, for that, for this, for that, I give you praise." I mean, so it may be one of those sequences, but it can't just be every line saying, I'm happy, you know. And then the last line is, "I'm really happy." So it may be that you have two lines that are, this is where I was, two lines, this is where I'm going, where I want to be, and two lines, I made it. I mean, I don't know. I mean, each of you, you know, and you may take any old theme, but the important thing is that we're basically dealing with something in praise.
The last line is, "I am really happy now."
Yeah. You might find after you do it that your language is a bit simplistic and you'd like to improve it a little bit. Now, one other little last thing before you embark on this. Just realize there's also strong beats and weak beats. I'm trying to make you the easiest example, because sometimes people put them and they do the whole thing and they've got it all worked out except the accents are on the wrong syllable. That really happens to hymns that have a pickup beat. You know, this one doesn't. This one starts bum, you know, this one starts strong. D, do, do, D, D, do, bum, bum. I mean, it starts very strong, you know. But halfway through, there's that little, you know, emphasis. D, da, 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 bum, 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 bum. dee da dee da bum bum bum. So it's like 4 and 3. That's a subtext to kind of be aware of. But it may be that once you've done it, if it doesn't feel right, it may be because of the way you're placing of it is. You all know, you can all do it because you've all sung, you know, if you sing a hymn and it doesn't work, it's like trying to sing, I mean, we sometimes do it in the dining hall, singing Take Me Out to the Ball Game, and we started before the beat, yeah. And then it's like, everything is like, take me out to the ball game, take me out to the crowd by me. Something got off. It's kind of like watching a movie when the sound and the mouth aren't working together. You're kind of going like this. All right, they can do it. It's going to be fabulous.
Let's all stand up, find groups, probably, hopefully not more than 5, because you want to be able to have some conversation about this little exercise. The gift of someone who can listen for us and think in terms of patterns and forms, can internalize them so much that they can become a part of us, so that, as you said, you don't normally think of what you do it. But at some point, he had to spend some time thinking about what he was doing and getting skilled on just playing the forms so that they grew inside and then you could use them. And that's the gift, for me, to write it down and get it out there so that then we could work with it. And that could be true for us in our prayer life as well. No small issue about the Psalms as a resource for our faith. But to steal a moment of time more, Philippians 2, 5 through 11. Though he was in the form of Christ, God did not count himself equal to God, but emptied himself, taking the form of a servant, and therefore was highly exalted. Do you remember that passage? Yes. There it is, the pattern of orientation, disorientation, reorientation, seen for us clearly in the life of Jesus. That movement, who is the one for us who is the heart of God, who is God's own self in the midst of us. And so that little pattern to be useful, and the forms of the Psalms to be useful in our lives, and to invite us when we don't hear, we ask the questions. We let our spiritual crap detectors be at work as we hear what's going on in church as well as other places. And we keep asking, whose interests are reflected in what we're talking about? Whose interests are being served by what we are talking about? And we desperately want to hear the world of the fish being lifted up, you know, taking the form of a servant. We want to hear from that world. We want to hear from those voices that don't normally get to speak wherever they are. And my friend Tom Soldner, who's hopefully will be here on the weekend or the first part of the week, says to us in the terms of the Psalms, there seem to be only questions. How can we sing the Lord's song in a hostile land? How long will it be this way, O Lord? We are learning to hope for the new life that God gives rather than the shape of life we would imagine that is best for us and our brothers and sisters. We are learning to hope from the oppressed of this land, from African Christians who know the cross and strain their eyes daily for expectation of new life. The hope of God's people, the only certain hope God gives, rises out of the ashes of our dreams. It is death to life promise of baptism, the crucified and risen presence that we eat and drink at the table. It is a foolish hope that keeps our faith alive, fires compassion, and keeps us working for the program that expects God's kingdom to come even here. Finally, he said, we frequently hear people in the U.S. suggest that their lives must be boring or trivial in comparison to our own here in South Africa. It is not true on any count. Our lives are different in many ways, but yours are not less important or less exciting. Perhaps it is easier for us to identify the enemies, articulate the problems, see the complexities, appreciate the gifts, but certainly we do not have any more or greater of any of these than you do. The shape of the oppression is different in the U.S., but it is present there also. The personal tragedies have different faces and facts, but are no less tragic. The ministry to which you are called may be conceived of in different terms, but we share the same ministry. The oppression, sickness, wickedness, homelessness, and racism of the U.S. are often, most often, hidden, but certainly there is more to lull folks into insensitivity. Maybe that makes your ministries, our ministries that is, even more challenging, that we must work to maintain clarity about our calling and the needs around us. There is a need for God's people to be refuge and strength to others in every time and place. We are partners in the same ministry, sharing the good news of Jesus Christ, being refuge and strength and a help in trouble. So we give you thanks. At the same time, we share the same source of support and comfort. God, our refuge and strength, a very present help in trouble. Therefore, we will not fear, though the earth be moved, though the mountains be toppled, even into the depths of the sea. Shalom, Tom, for all the soldiers. Shalom for Red, and thank you for the week.